Right. So we're holding on Dalit on the days, fifth line of the wide lines. Okay, we talked about the exchange that was done in the Midbar of the Levim for the Bechorim of the rest of the Shvatim, and of the Levim's animals for the animals of the Jewish people. We discussed primarily, we're talking about exchanging for their Petra Chamor. Actually, I didn't mention yesterday, Tosfos seems to understand that we're talking about as far as the Bechorim of the Kosher animals as well, that the Levim's animals at that one time in history substituted for their Kosher animals. Anyway, so now we were talking about mainly we're focusing on the Petra Chamor, which Rashi understands the Gemara to be talking only about that, and Tosfos understands that it might also be talking about the kosher animals as well, which have Kedushas Bechorim. But now let's talk about the dinim, more about the dinim of Bechorim in the Midbar. It's fine. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Kodesh Bechorim Bamidbar. Rabbi Yochanan says that the Bechorim had Kedusha in the Midbar. Meaning, we have to consider. In other words, there were Bechorim who went out of Mitzrayim, who were already born by the time the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, and now they're living in the Midbar for 40 years, or maybe some of them died in the Midbar, whatever. Then you have ones who are born in the Midbar, and then you have ones who are born later on in Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbi Yochanan is saying that the Bechorim in the Midbar were Kaddish as well. And we're going to go through the discussion over here. We're talking primarily about the ones who were born in the Midbar. Rabbi Yochanan says the ones who, at least at this point in the discussion, we're talking about the ones who were born in the Midbar, Rabbi Yochanan says also had Kedusha, whereas Rish Lakish says they did not. Rabbi Yochanan on the Kaddish Bechoris the Midbar like this. And when we talk about Bechoris over here, by the way, we're talking about both human Bechorim and Bechorim of animals. So as the Rish Lakish holds that the ones that were born in the Midbar did not have Kedusha, only later on when they came into Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Kodesh Bechorim Bamidbar Derachmana Amalekish, because the Torah says that Bechorim have to be Kodesh. Dichtiv Kadesh Liko Bechor, today's Kriya, sanctify for me every Bechor, and that was right after they left Mitzrayim. Because it also mentions about the mitzvah of Pesach.
Yes, that's my question.
So the reason
we mention just Pesach?
Because you have to have enough psukim to be able to call up people for Aliyah. So
you don't have enough?
You wouldn't have enough otherwise, especially if you have to add the Pashas Psukim and Stumas. Yeah. So what we do is we read the whole section since it includes the mitzvah of Bechorim, but also the mitzvah of Pesach. Rish Lakish says no on the basis of another pasuk in the same section. Because the pasuk says when Hashem will bring you into Eretz Yisrael, then the next pasuk continues you will cause all Petarechem to pass over, like they all belong to Hashem and they have Kedusha. Mikval Demeikul Kodesh, implying that the ones that were born in the Midbar did not have Kedusha, only when they come into Eretz Yisrael. So, Eisvei Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. It will be when Hashem brings you into Eretz Yisrael. Eisvei Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. So Rabbi Yochanan said to Rish Lakish, what do you mean that the ones that were in the Midbar did not have Kedusha? We learn in a Braisa, we learn this at the end of Zvachim, Ad Shalai Hokam HaMishkan, before the Mishkan was built, and then during the time before the Mishkan was built, Bomos were Mutter, the bomis were mutter, a person could bring private korbanos wherever they wanted, and the avoda was done by the bechorim. So therefore, so the bechorim had kedusha. Mefoshim point out, by the way, we're not so much talking about if a person wants to bring an individual korban, not necessarily does it need to be a bechor to do that. We're talking about primarily when you're talking about a korban that was being brought on behalf of a tzibur or on behalf of a group of people or whatever, that you would have to have a bechor. That's the
before the chetaega, the bechorim were doing
that. Yeah, well, not only before the chetaega, we're talking about until the Mishkan was built, which was almost a year, which was like 9 months after the chetaega. The chetaega was Shavuos of the time, where the Mishkan was set up permanently for the first time on Rosh Chodesh Nissan the following year. So until the Mishkan was set up, b'mayis u'mutter, and when avodah was being done, it was being done by the bechorim.
Who had this done?
Yeah, but the point remains, in other words, that the Bechorim had Kedusha. Omalei, so Rish Lakish answers, so what? That means both and Shiyotim and Mitzrayim. It doesn't mean the ones who were born in the Midbar, it means the ones who came out of Mitzrayim, still retaining their Kedusha. I think Rashi talking about Mistabo, yeah, obviously it's logical to say that. Do you like Temahachi, because if you're not going to say that, then Shona Bami Eved Avoda, who? How could a baby under a year old possibly do the Avoda? They left Mitzrayim Pesach, The following year is Chodesh Nissan, the Mishkan is set up. They have less than a year there. So obviously, anybody who Bechorim were during that Avodah were necessarily ones who were born in Mitzrayim. Yes, good point. Whoever brought up this question, why did he even bother bringing up the question? He realized good and well that kids that age can't do the Avodah.
He brought up this question.
Yeah, so it wasn't why they bothered bringing up the question. No, in fact, it's Reb Yochanan bringing up the question. So why is Reb Yochanan bothering to bring it up? He knows kids that age can't do the Avodah. And in fact, some of them are Foshim say, it's not only that they physically can't, some of them are Foshim learn that a child under Bar Mitzvah age is not allowed to do the Avodah. In the Mishkan and the Beit Hamikdash, we learned in Zvachim that technically a boy above 13, once he has Shteis Tiferes, is able to do the Avodah, although in practice they usually wouldn't allow it until he was 20. But there's some of the Mepharshim say that even when we're talking about private Bamos, yes, a Bar Mitzvah boy, let's say, could do it, but not below that. So then in that case, then the question is even sharper over here. Not only that physically couldn't. Yeah. Okay, so the answer is Hochi Kokashalim. Okay, but Rabbi Yochanan's point is like this. The reason why he's bringing up this point of Avodah B'Bechorus, implying that in the desert, the ones who were born in Mitzrayim still have Kedusha, he argues like this. If you're going to say that the Kedusha did not stop, in other words, that not only the Bechorim that were born in Mitzrayim, but also the ones who were born in the Midbar still continued to have Kedusha, well, then you could say, Hanach de Meikra, Nami Le Talk of Kedusha Sai. That's just it. If you say that the Kedusha of Bechorus was not temporarily suspended in the Midbar, okay, then it makes sense. Hanach de Meikra, Nami, the ones who were Bechorim before, the ones who were born in Mitzrayim and came out of there, Le Talk of Kedusha Sai, their Kedusha wouldn't have gone away. But if you say that in the Midbar, the Kedusha of Bechorim was temporarily suspended because of because the Pasuk says, Vahoyah Kiviyaka. The Pasuk's Vahoyah Kiviyaka was said right at the Kiyas Mitzrayim. So even before the Chatzah Egel, apparently, according to the Shlokish, the idea was there was going to be a period in the Midbar. Of course, you have to keep in mind, of course, remember the original plan was there were only going to be a very short time in the Midbar. After that, they were going to go shortly afterwards in Teretz Yisrael because of the Chetam Arnaglim that was delayed. But anyway, the point is, Rabbi Yechon is saying that you, the Shlokish, are bringing from the Pasuk Vahoyah Kiviyach, but implying that only when you come in Teretz Yisrael is there Kedushas Bechorim. In other words, Rish Lakish, you're saying that the Bechorim who were born in Mitzrayim still have their Kedushas. The Bechorim who were born in the desert do not. Then the Bechorim who are born once they come in Teretz Yisrael have Kedushas. What's the logic? If you're going to say that the Kedusha of Bechorim was suspended in the Midbar, the ones who have Kedusha from before, the Kedusha should also go away, says Rabbi Yochanan. So if you see that not, if you see that Avodah of Bechorim, that you could have 13 or 20 or 25 or whatever year old Bechorim are able to do the Avodah in the Midbar, and they are ones who were born in Mitzrayim, so they still retain their Kedusha, why shouldn't it be logical that the ones who were born in the Midbar also have Kedusha? Why should we say that the newly born ones don't have Kedusha? That Kedusha of Bechorus is suspended as far as the newly born ones, but not as far as the ones that came out of Mitzrayim. Rabbi Yochanan says that's not logical. So what would Rish Lakish answer to that? He would say, yeah, I would hold. There's a difference. The Kedush, the ones who had Kedusha already retained that Kedusha. It doesn't go away just because in the Midbar the concept of Bechorah is suspended. The Loi Kedush, the ones who have not yet had Kedusha at the time because they were born in the Midbar, Loi Kedush, fine, they didn't get Kedusha.
Because
of Pasuk Kiviyaka. In other words, Rish Lakish would say exactly that. Anybody who was born before Hashem said Kadosh Li Kol Bechor, fine. They have Kedushas Bechor, and therefore it doesn't go away from them. But the ones who were born afterwards, yeah, they don't get. Anybody who was born during the 40 years in the desert doesn't get Kedushas Bechor. Says Rashi.
Already when it started.
Hashem said Kadosh Li Kol Bechor. That means Rish Lakish would learn that it means any Bechorim who are living now. But any Bechorim who have not yet been born are subject to Vahoyah Kiviyaka. They're only going to get Kedushas Bechorim when they come in Teretz Yisrael. Yeah, well, Kaddish is, no, it's an imperative. Make for me Kaddish, call no. Bechorim. But fine, that means any Bechorim that exists now. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan would say there's no distinction. Okay. Eitzvei, Rabbi Yochanan asks on Rish Lakish, what about another Brais that says, Oseayim Shehukam HaMishkan, on the day when the Mishkan was set up, Rosh Chodesh Nissan, Kovalahem B'Yisroel, Nidorim U'Nidobes, Chatois V'Hashom Bechorus HaMaitris, on that day, there were offered for the Jewish people, Nedarim and Nedavos, the two kinds of voluntary korbanos, Chatois v'Hashamos, Bechoros and Maisros, and here's the key thing, that Bechoros were offered and Maisa Behema was offered, implying, in other words, that so you see that it's saying on that day they brought Bechoros. So then, according to you, why would they bring Bechoros if they didn't have on the day the Mishkan, on the day the Mishkan was set up? So on the face of it, that means Oisai Yom Ein the Kanva Elachloy. It's Rashi. Bechoros or Maisros. Bechoros or Maisros. Yeah. Well, that's what we're talking about. But when we talk about Bechoros, we're talking about the human Bechorim and Bechorim. Rav Shlokish is arguing that the whole concept of Bechorah was suspended in the Midbar.
Behema and human.
So then in that case, but if we're saying that Bechorahs were offered, on the face of it, Oseayim Ein Mikanva Elachloi. So that sounds like it means, I'm skipping a few lines. So if you say that Bechorahs were offered, then that means Bechorahs had Kedusha. Okay, Rav Shlokish went into also. Same thing. Hochinami Ba'osan Shiyotim Mitzrayim. It means also the same thing. It means the bechorah, the animal bechorahs that were brought out from Mitzrayim, and they hadn't been able to offer them all that time yet because there was no permanent mizbeach, and you can't bring chovos. We learned at the end of Zvachim, and we have different opinions over there, and Rabbeinu Gersha brings one of them over here. Whether you were able to bring korbanos chova before there was a mishkan and a mizbeach. Voluntary korbanos, we know you can bring out a bama, but korbanos that are required, for example, bechoros, were you able to bring before that? So it's a machlokes. But so our Gemara may be going over here according to the opinion that they couldn't. So that's what it means. That korva lahem b'Yisrael, the Dorman Dom, now for the first time they were able to bring chatoris, hashamos, and so forth, and bechoros and maizos. The point being, in other words, that Rish Lakish would say, yeah, the ones that were brought out in the animal bechorim that were brought out of Mitzrayim that couldn't be offered all this time, or at least that hadn't been offered all this time, in the case maybe, now they should bring them on the Mizbeach, on the Mishkan.
But not others.
No, in other words, but not the ones that were born in the Midbar, right? And in fact, Umina, and in fact, Rish Lakish says, in fact, I would bring a proof from that Braitha. You, Rav Yochanan, are bringing it as a question on me. I'll turn it around and show that I have a proof for it from that. The Braitha is saying that day they were offered, implying only that day, implying but after that they weren't offered. Well, why wouldn't they be offered throughout the years in the Midbar? Inevitably, people have Bechor Behema Tahara because they don't have Kedusha. So Rosh Lakish says, Adarab, this Braitha that uses the word Oysa Hayom is a proof for me.
That's for the Oysa Hayom who come
a Mishkan. Who come a Mishkan, that's the point.
Because a Mishkan, not on first.
The day the Mishkan was set up, now they had a backlog of Bechoros, and Rish Lakish is learning they were only able to bring them that day. But any Bechoros that were born after that and had not yet been offered, then they don't have Kedusha yet. Ikadamri, and in fact, another version of this last part of the discussion goes the other way around. Eisveirim Shlokish Lo Rav Yochanan. In this second version, Rish Lakish is the one who brings this Braitha to ask on Rav Yochanan. We say, Oisayim Shokan Mishkan, Shokan Mishkan, Kovala Hamisro, Nedorim, Dovas, Chatoris, Hashem, Chorus, and Isis, which seems to imply, Oisayim Ein, Mikanva, Elachloi, only on that day did they bring them, not throughout the rest of the time they were in the Midbar. Why not? Apparently, the Kushas Bechoros was suspended during that time. So that Braitha would be approved to me. And Rav Yochanan would answer him, no. Eimam, Oisayim, Elach. No, it means from then on. It means that was the first day they could bring them, and from then on, throughout the 40 years in the Midbar, whenever a person had a Bechor Behema Tahara born in his flock, then he would bring it as a carbon. So what then is the Chiddush? We know Korbanos were brought in the Mishkan. The Chiddush is the other way around. Not only that day, like the Shlokish wants to think of it, that only that day were they bringing it, and they were not bringing them in the rest of the 40 years because the Bechorim didn't have Kedusha. No, rather the Chiddush of the Braitha is, only from that day on could they bring them. They couldn't bring them earlier. Alma Chorvis Babama Lekaru, which as we were just saying, you have an opinion in Zvachim that says that Chorvis, that obligatory Karbonis, could not be brought on a Bama. So according to, so Rav Yochanan would say, that's the Chiddush of the Braitha. The Chiddush isn't that from then on they could bring the Karbonis. Obviously they could bring Karbonis. The Chiddush is that this is the first time they were able to bring Bechorim. Like this, they had a backlog of Bechorim that had been born in Mitzrayim, and that had been, of animal Bechorim, that is, and that had been born during the first year in the Midbar, which they hadn't been able to be Makkos, and now the Mishkan is built, they're finally able to start being Makkos then. but not that it was only that day, like Rish Lakish would say. Okay.
It had a backlog, but even though the backlog was dealt with, they could still
continue afterwards. As new ones are born, they can continue bringing them. That's ridiculous. Not like whereas Rish Lakish would understand. Oisayo would mean it was only that one day. They had to clear out the backlog, and then that's it. After that, none of the other ones.
Oisayo means it started there, but it continued.
Right. And Rish Lakish would say Oisayo is only that day. Right. Actually, Tosfos points out the expression, you know, when we definitely, there's no question the Dorim and the Dovis continued to be brought during the 40 years. And Chatoris and Hashem is also. According to Rish Lakish, the reason why it would stress Oisayim is specifically regarding Bechor. According to him, out of these six types of Korbanos that we mentioned, the Bechor is one type that would not have been brought during the rest of the 40 years in the Midbar. So because of that, he uses the word Oisayim, even though when it comes to the other five types, they did continue to be brought throughout the 40 years. Okay. Next. So Bechor is only excluded because Vahayu Kiviyachad at the one time. Okay, Toshma. Okay, let's bring another proof. Another Braisa says, Nimtsei Sa'ata Omer. So you come out figuring out like this. B'shloish makomis kodshu b'choris l'Yisrael. There are three places where b'chorim were made kodesh for the Jewish people. B'mitzrayim, when Hashem said kodesh l'kod b'chor. U'b'midbar, and in the midbar. U'b'knisasim Yisrael l'aretz. And when the Jewish people entered out Yisrael. B'mitzrayim ma'u emet kodesh l'kod b'chor. In Parshas Bamidbar, Hashem says, every Bechor in the Jewish people belongs to me. And when they come into Eretz Yisrael, it says, when you come into Eretz Yisrael, then you should pass them through. So you have, in other words, three times, so you're saying that three times called Shul Bechor, and one of them is in the Midbar. So what's Rish Lakish going to do with that? Amnachmeis would answer,
On behalf of
Rish Lakish, yeah. All the Braisa means is there's three places where the Torah is informing us that Bechoras are going to have Kedusha. Of Mitzrayim, but they didn't actually get Kedusha yet. Only when they came into Eretz Yisrael. The question is, Mitzrayim nami like Kedush? So what do you mean? The ones that were born in Mitzrayim didn't get Kedusha? How come in the Kodesh? Even Rish Lakish so far agrees that the ones that were born in the Tzrayim got Kedusha. He's just disagreeing that the ones who were born in the Midbar. So what is Rav Nachman Yitzchok saying that they did not become Kodesh until they came into Eretz Yisrael? The answer is
even
Rish Lakish, right, would say that the ones who were born in the Tzrayim did have Kedusha, right, and they retain that Kedusha. The answer is Hachakama. You're right. What Rav Nachman Yitzchok means is Mehem Kodshu, Mehem Lo Kodshu. Among those three times, some of them became Kodesh, some didn't. The ones that were born in Mitzrayim did get again, there are three times we're saying that they were told that there's going to be Kiddush for Kodesh. Once in Mitzrayim, once in the Midbar, once when they enter Eretz Yisrael. Rav Nachman Yitzchok would understand, according to Rish Lakish, what it means is that the commandment in Mitzrayim actually took effect and those Bechoras got Kiddusha. The commandment in the Midbar did not yet take effect at that time. The Bechoris that were born at that time did not yet have Kedusha. And the one, when they come into Eretz Yisrael, that takes effect.
The ones who were born in the Midbar at that time didn't have Kedusha.
And the Pashtos, maybe they had
Kedusha. They didn't have Kedusha in the Midbar.
They didn't. That's the thing. According to Rish Lakish, they didn't. According to Rish Lakish, they didn't. The Hashem said they're going to have Kedusha, but they don't yet. Master for a papa. Okay, your papa asked them that. What do you mean? Is a midbar like Kodshu? You're telling me that the people and the animals that were born in the midbar did not have Kodshu? Code calls up B'chor Zachor L'Bnei Yisrael. The Pasuk says, Hashem tells Moshe, again in Parshas Bamidbar, count all the B'chorim, all the male B'chorim of the rest of the B'nei Yisrael from 1 month and older and figure out how many there are and then exchange the Levium for them. Well, the point is that we said that then you have to have Levium substituting for the B'chorim. The problem is, if we're saying from 1 month and older, when was the census taking place? Hashem tells Moshe to take the census in year of the second year when they're in the Midbar. So we're talking a year and 2 weeks after they left Mitzrayim. So babies, they left Mitzrayim on the 15th of Nisan in the 1 year. The following year, Rosh Chodesh year, Hashem told Moshe to count the B'nai Yisrael, and then he told them to count the Bechorim. So we're talking a year and a couple of weeks later. So, and Hashem is telling them to count all the Bechorim from 1 month old and older. So the ones, so obviously, the ones that are born that are 1 month old, the ones that are 2 months old, is better to have Kedusha, because that's why you have to have Levim substituting for them. If we're saying that the ones, if the Shluchos are saying the ones who were born in the Midrash have no Kedusha, why do you need Levim to substitute for them? Hashem should be telling Moshe, count only the ones who are 13 months old and older. Okay, you're right, the Gemara says. Ela I itmar hochi. No, rather, if the discussion was said between Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lakish, it went as follows. Rabbi Yechon and Amma Kodshu v'lei posku, v'Rish Lakish Amma Kodshu u'posku. Rabbi Yechon would say that once they have Kedusha, the Kedusha did not go away. And Rish Lakish would say, Kodshu u'posku, Rish Lakish would say, yes, originally they had Kedusha, but then after the census in Parshas Bamidbar, then afterwards the Kedusha went away until they enter Eretz Yisrael.
Why were they numbered then?
They were numbered at that time, because at that time they still had Kedusha. But after that, maybe it was actually Chetam or Naglim, I don't know, whatever it was. At some later point, Posku, Rashi just says, from the census of Parshas by Midbar and onward, they lost the Kedusha, says Rish Lakish. So now, Tosfos points out, in that case, if you understand it that way, that it means that all the questions that Rabbi Yochanan was asking on Rish Lakish don't have any, there's no place for them. Because before we were asking, for example, how could it be Rabbi Yochanan is asking if you still have the Bechoras had Kedusha enough to do the Avodah, the ones who were old enough to be doing the Avodah, the ones who left Mitzrayim as older children. No, well, that's the point, though. Now, if we have this new understanding, sure, they had Kedusha at the time the Mishkan was set up, because the Mishkan was set up a month before the census. So then it's not a question. And the same thing with the other questions that we brought up.
They couldn't do that. They
no, they could do the Avodah on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. They could not after
not
that. Obviously, but in other words, the point is the older ones, the older ones could. That was the point. Before Rabbi Yochanan asked the Shlokish, it doesn't seem to be logical that if you say in the ones that were born in Mitzrayim still have Kedusha, then the ones who were born within the Midbar, why should they not get Kedusha? And if you're going to say the ones in the Midbar don't have Kedusha, then why should the ones who were born in Mitzrayim have lost their Kedusha? Now, if we have this new understanding of Rish Lakish, then that's not a question, because, okay, all of them had Kedusha, and all of them lost their Kedusha after the census. And then the same thing with the other questions. So Tosfos says, in that case, it means that even though we quoted Rabbi Yochanan saying, asking these questions to Rish Lakish, and Rish Lakish answering the questions, we have to say now, if we have this new understanding of Rish Lakish, that those questions were not actually asked. In other words, the Gemara is paraphrasing what Rabbi Yochanan would have asked Rish Lakish based on our initial assumption. On the other hand, you have Achronim, you have the Rashash, you have some other Achronim who understand Rish Lakish a little bit differently. Kodshu Upasku means not just regarding the ones who were born in the Midbar, but also the ones who were born in Mitzrayim lost their Kedusha after the census. And in that case, then the questions could have still been asked on him.
Today they had no Kedusha.
There came a point in the Midbar, for 39 years in the Midbar, when they had no Kedusha.
Today
they have Kedusha, of course.
They do have Kedusha.
That's why you have to have Binyan Aben. That's why you have the Dinim of Bechor Behem Atzahara, yeah. Okay, so the question is,
they don't have much
Kedusha. No, they obviously don't do the Avodah. No, they have Kedusha in so far as they have to have Binyan Aben. Okay, so now that we settled that, now that we settled that we understand Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish's opinion, let's ask, the Shlema Rish Lakish Kedamatam, so I understand why Rish Lakish is saying that there came a point when the Bechorim's Kedusha was suspended. The reason is Kedamatam, because he says the reason, he brings from a pasuk, V'ho Yekiv Yachad. El Rabbi Yochanan my time, but according to Rabbi Yochanan, why would he say that the Bechorim kept their Kedusha throughout, that throughout the years in the desert they would have to be offering Bechor Behema Tahora, and they would have to be redeeming Bechor Behema Tmeya, and they would have to be doing Pidyon Aben for Bechorim. If it says V'ho Yekiv Yachad, what is Rabbi Yochanan doing with that pasuk? The answer is Omer Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Elazar says, Rabbi Yochanan Chazoi Bechilma, Rabbi Yochanan prefaces what he's going to answer by saying as follows. I saw Rabbi Yochanan in a dream last night, and therefore demil samalya amina. Therefore, I know that's a simon to me min hashamayim that I'm going to be able to say a good reason in the Beit Medrash today. And what is that reason? What would Rabbi Yochanan do with Rish Lakish's pasuk v'hayakiviyacha? Amakro liyiu b'hava yasim. Well, first, actually, before we get to what he's going to do with v'hayakiviyacha, first we have to figure out why is Rabbi Yochanan saying that the b'chorim had their kedushas rab. Forget what he's going to do with v'hayakiviyacha. We'll deal with that in a second. Where is Rabbi Yochanan getting his shitta from that they continued to have their kedushas throughout all the years in the desert? The answer is Rabbi Elazar says amakro liyiu b'hava yasim yehu. Because the pasuk says about the Bechorim, li yu, they shall be mine, Hashem says. Yiyu means b'hava yasin yu, they should continue in their status. They should continue in the way they exist now. Now, at the time of the census, they have kedusha. Therefore, following that, they're also going to continue to have kedusha.
That means from Mitzrayim.
From Mitzrayim throughout, meaning there's no interruption in the midbar, right? So now the question is, Rabbi Yochanan v'hayakiv yacha b'havar to my Ovid life. Okay, now what is Rabbi Yochanan doing with Rish Lakish's pasuk? Fine, he has his own pasuk, li yiyu, but what is he doing with v'hayakiv yacha? The answer is, mahum b'ayla l'chadatana dvei Rabbi Shmuel. He uses that for the lip, he uses that for what Tana dvei Rabbi Shmuel teaches us, that the pasuk means, asay mitzvazu shebishvila tikonis la'aret. Do this mitzvah, and in the course of that, you will go into Eretz Yisrael. In other words, v'hayakiv yacha doesn't mean when you go into Eretz Yisrael, the b'chorim have kedusha. It means you be doing this mitzvah, and in the course of that, v'hayakiv yacha, Hashem will be bringing you into Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Fine. So that's the discussion so far. Now, Amalei Rav Mordechai l'Rav Ashi. So Rav Mordechai says to Rav Ashi, after when they're now in Rav Ashi's times, they're compiling the material for the Gemara, so we need to know all the versions of discussions that are floating around out there. After Nahochi Masmisula, you in your yeshiva, the pastor's yeshiva of Surah, a Muslim Chassia, whatever, are learning the discussion the way we had it all this time, that Rosh Lakish is the one who said there was an interruption in the midbar, Rabbi Yochanan is the one who's saying that there was not, and they're arguing back and forth on that. Anan, we, in our yeshiva, Itcha Masmimimimimimimimim, we learned the other way around, that it was Rosh Lakish who said there was no interruption, and Rabbi Yochanan who said there was an interruption. Namely, the way we learn it is Rabbi Yochanan Amar Loi Kodshu B'chores B'Midbar, V'Rish Lakish Amar Kodshu B'chores B'Midbar, which sounds like the other way around. Amar Loi, so Rav Ashi tells him that version can't possibly be correct. Does that mean then you're going to flip around all of the questions that we asked before, each of the ones that we said Rabbi Yochanan asked Rish Lakish, you're going to flip them around and say Rish Lakish asked them to Rabbi Yochanan? Okay, and not only that, V'Apchitu La Lahad Rav Elazar. And you're also going to reverse what Rabbi Elazar said, that he said, I saw Rabbi Yochanan in a dream, and because of that, I know that I'm going to be saying a good explanation of this medrash. Rabbi Yochanan was Rabbi Elazar's Rebbe. Rish Lakish was not. Rish Lakish and Rabbi Elazar were both Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan. So it makes sense that Rabbi Elazar would have said, I saw my Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan, in a dream. This is after he passed away, of course. Therefore, it shows a simon min hashamayim that I'm going to give a good answer. He wouldn't have been saying such a thing about Rish Lakish, because Rish Lakish was his colleague. So therefore, if we're saying that Rabbi Elazar gave a reason, liyu b'hava yasin yiyu, meaning that there was no interruption, that can only refer to, and then he says, it's because I saw Rabbi Yochanan in a dream, it can only be that he saw Rabbi Yochanan, and it can't be that he's saying that I saw Rish Lakish.
Rish Lakish wouldn't have seen him because...
Well, not he wouldn't have seen him, but if he saw Rish Lakish in a dream, he wouldn't have thought that that's any special significance. Because Rish Lakish was Rabbi Yochanan is his Rebbe, so that shows him something special. Amalei, so Rav Mordechai clarifies what our version, the way we learn it in our yeshiva, what our version means is loy kodshu lahu means loy hutzruchu l'kdash. In our version, when Rabbi Yechon is saying loy kodshu b'choris b'midbar, it doesn't mean like in your version of Rish Lakish, loy kodshu meaning that they did not have kedusha, there was an interruption for 39 years. Rather, what it means is that you did not have to be makdish them. If you wanted to be makdish the bechor, you didn't have to be makdish it like other behemoths, because in other words, they had kedusha all this time. In other words, our version of Rav Yechanan agrees with your version of Rav Yechanan. Kodshu b'chores from loy kodshu b'chores from midbar means they didn't have to be makdish them; they automatically had kedusha. So the question is, Yehochi Hainu Didan, so Rav Ashi says in that case, that amounts to the same thing as our version, why are you bothering to mention it? The answer is, Kamash Malon Chai Varam Lom Goloshim Rabbi. A person is supposed to say things over using the expression that is Rebbe used. So even though it amounts to the same thing, nevertheless, Rav Mordechai wanted to report to Rav Ashi, you should know, in our yeshiva, our Rebbeim taught it to us using this Loshim, that Rav Yechanan Amal Loi Kodshu L'Chodesh Vamidbar, But we're meant to understand that it means not that they did not have Kedusha, but rather that they didn't have to be given Kedusha because they automatically had Kedusha.
What's the point of saying that if they automatically
had Kedusha? If they had automatically had
Kedusha. How would you give it extra Kedusha?
That's because, well, technically with a Bechor, there is actually a mitzvah to say that the Bechor is Kaddish. You don't have to because the Bechor is intrinsically Kaddish as soon as it's born. However, there is a mitzvah that I'm right to verbally say this animal has Kedushas Bechor. Rabbi Yochanan's point is, you didn't have to do that. These animals have the full-fledged kedusha of a bechor, even though they were born in the
desert.
There was a mitzvah, but it's not required. So Rabbi Yochanan is saying, the ones in the desert, you didn't have to be makdish then. Any other animal, if you want to be makdish, you have to be makdish. Rabbi Yochanan is informing us, don't think that these animals born in the desert did not have kedushas bechor, like we were saying all the time, Rish Lakish is saying.
They did,
and you didn't even have to be machdish then. That's the point. That's the point of Rav Mordechai's version. Whereas Rish Lakish in this version would take Chodesh B'chor from Midbar, meaning in other words that in this version Rish Lakish would be saying that the Bechorim did not intrinsically have Kedusha. If you wanted to be, if you wanted to offer it, you had to verbally say, you had to say this has Kedusha B'chor. Okay, so Rav Yochanan's opinion, at least it comes out, essentially the same thing, but Chayv Adam Loim of Lashon Rabbah. A person has to say things over in the Lashon of his Rebbe. B'shem Omer means you tell it over in the name of the person who said it, but not necessarily keeping the exact expression. The Lashon Rabbah means using the exact same word.
So let's say if I'm a Talmid of Rish Lakish, I have to say it the way Rish Lakish says it?
You're supposed to, yes.
Not Rabbi Yochanan. You're going to have to prefer Rabbi Yochanan's version.
Right, if you're, yeah. Okay. No, but over here the point is we're not talking about who the halacha is like. Rav Mordechai is just saying when we in all yeshiva learned the machlokas of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, we learned Rabbi Yochanan's opinion using a different wording. Our Rebbe picked a different wording, loy kodesh b'chodesh b'midbar, and that's the wording therefore that I'm keeping to. Even though it amounts to the same thing as Rav Ashi's wording of kodesh b'chodesh b'midbar. All right, new discussion. We mentioned before. The halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan. I mean, it's not really matter. Well, it's not really. No, the halacha is you're supposed to say that it has kedushas bechor. But even if you didn't, it still has kedushas bechor. Even if you don't say.
That's
it.
Not
yeah. As far as what happened in the midbar, I mean, it's something that happened in the past. It's not necessarily so negay in halacha. But okay, fine. New discussion. We mentioned before that the Levim substituted for the bechorim in the midbar. Now, so the Gemara tells us. When they took the census, they took a census of all the Jewish people. Then they took a census of Levim. Then Hashem told Moshe to take a census of the Bechorim. There came out to be 22,273 Bechorim. There came out to be 22,000 Levim. Therefore, 22,000 of the Bechorim were substituted for by Levim, and the rest of them had to pay 5 shekels. So the Gemara tells us, Shor Kuntrukus Hassar Etzer Biechim Mandaka. Kuntrunkus, that was his name. The minister or the nobleman or whatever, or the pasha, some Roman nobleman, asked Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai as follows. The prophet Shalavim, now the Torah doesn't just say,
he was a Roman.
Yeah, but yes, this one off. And the going by that time, they had the Septuagint, they had translation, they had translations of the Torah. They were able to look into it and find out what's in it. At least on a superficial level. However, with that said, as we'll see from this and the next question, that really Rashi says he was meaning lakantar evidvarim. He just wanted to tease or whatever Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai and claim that the Torah is not accurate.
Rashi
says that. No, Rashi says that. Rashi says it further. Okay, so we asked him like this: the prophet Shalavim at the moitzu esrim mashnayim elaku shloish meis. If when you look at the detailed enumeration of Levim, you have the Torah enumerates Moshe counted the members of Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, the three super families of Levi, the three clans of Levi. What? In Parshas Bamidbar. Well, in Parshas Bamidbar. So he's counting them from a month and up. In Parshas Nasi, he counts them from 30 years old and up because those are the ones who are actually going to be serving and transporting the Mishkan and whatever. But first he takes a census of all the ones from 1 month up and old, from 1 month old and up, and you come out like this. You have 7,500 from Gershon, 8,600 from Kohath, 6,200 from Merari. The total comes out to 22,300. Then when the Torah gives the aggregate, that altogether will be an amount of 22,000, or Shlosh Meis Lehechon. Where did 300 go? Where did 300 disappear to? And in fact, Marshall says, The pasuk first gives the specific numbers for Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. And if we add them up, they come to 22,300. Then the Torah tells us all of the census that Moshe took from Levim came to 22,000. So where's the 300 disappeared? Why are the 300 missing? And Marsha points out, and the Medrash actually says on the pasuk as well, that this Kuntrukos was actually, it wasn't just that he's wondering about the numbers, he's accusing Moshe Rabbeinu that he did this in order to force that some of the Bechorim are going to have to pay Shkolim to Aaron. Because like I said, because if there had been 300 extra Levim, then you would have, it would outweigh the number of Bechorim, then you have fewer Bechorim than Levim, and then everybody is covered. So Amalei, Rabbi Yechon Manzaka answers him, Oysen Shloish Meis Bechoris on you. Those 300 Levim who aren't being counted later on themselves were Bechorim. The Ein Bechor Machia Bechor. One Bechor cannot take away the Kedusha of another Bechor. My time, and now why not? I'm going to buy Dial of Bechor, Shiachia Kedusha Zatma. It's enough that the Bechor should be able to take away his own Kedusha. In other words, what do we have? Up until that point, the Bechoris had Kedusha. We said before they were the ones doing the Avodah. Now we're going to have, from now on, the Levim and the Koyanim are going to be the ones doing it. So therefore, if you have a Levi who himself is a Bechor, then the Levi side of him outweighs the Bechor side of him, fine. But he can't also then go and substitute for another Bechor. So therefore, he's excluded, and therefore that's
not a real
Bechor. No, not even, because he is a real Bechor. But he can be Poyda himself, in effect. He is Poyda himself as a Bechor. Then you have the 22,000 non-Bechor Levim are exchanging for 22,000 Bechorim of the rest of the Shavuot. Okay, so that's what it was. But Oid Shalai.
What did he do? He paid 5 shekels?
No, so again. So you have 22. No, the Levi Bechor didn't have to pay anything because his Levi side is paid to his Bechor side. So he doesn't have to pay 5 shekels. But then of the remaining Levim, 22,000 of them substituted for Bechorim and the rest, yeah. Okay, fine. But Oid Shalai, then this Kuntrukos asked Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai another question. Yeah, another mathematical question. This one has to do with the collection of Machzah Shekel that the Torah describes in Parshas Kodesh. Now, the Torah tells us that they had 603,550 half shekels.
603,550.
So since you have a half shekel per person, it comes out to 301,775 shekels. Now, in Gemara terminology, you have as follows. You have 25 shekel make a mona, 25 shekel make a mona, and 60 mona make a kitzer. So it comes out therefore that it comes out therefore 1,500 shekel make a kitzer. Yeah, at least in the regular system. You have 25 shekel to 25 and then 60. This Kuntrukos asks Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai like this. The Gibui Kesef, when it comes to raising the money to build the Mishkan, Atamotza Mosayim Va'achas Kikar Va'achas Esri Mona. If you break down this 301,775 Sloyim, you come out to 201. You break them down into monas and then you divide them in here. Let's divide them by 25 to get monas. You have 12,071 mona.
Right.
Divide that in turn by 60.
It's not divisible by 60.
It's not evenly divided by 60. But you have 201 and change.
Right.
So you have 201.
So that's what he's asking.
Okay, so he's asking like this. The Gibri Akesar, at the most of Mosayim Ba'achas Kicker, you find 201 Kicker, the Achas Esri Mone, and then you find 11 Mone, because a Mone is 25 Sloyim. So you have, in other words, so you have the 301,775. 301,500 divide down into 201 kicker, and then you have 275 stella left, and 275 divided by 25 is 11. So you come out to 201 kicker and 11 mon. Then he said, then continues Kuntrukos. Over Nesinus Akesef, then you have, the Torah describes, what did they use the money for? At the Motza Ma'ak Kicker. Then you only find, the Pasuk says they only had 100 Kicker. Just did Vahim Ma'ak Kicker Akesef, what's that? Because the Pasuk says they used 100 Kicker to cast the foundation sockets for the Mishkan, because each one weighed a Kicker, and they had 100 of them. So 100 Kicker plus is missing. So yes.
There should have been 201.
There should have been 201, right. So like this.
And they only had 100?
They only had 100. Because the Pasuk says Ma'ak Kicker Akesef, right. So the question is, this Kuntrukos asked, Moshe Rabbeinu Ganav Haya, was your teacher Moshe a thief, a Kuv Yustus Haya, or was he a Kuv Yustus? What is a kuvyustus? Rashi explains here and in a number of other places in Shas that a kuvyustus is a kidnapper. So what's a kidnapper doing over here? So Mepharshim have different explanations. One of them is that actually he's referring back to the previous thing about the Bechorim, that it seems that in the Levim, that it seems that Moshe, so to speak, kidnapped 300 Levim. Another explanation is we're talking about Max the Shekel over here, because we're saying either he stole money or he kidnapped people, because either way, there's so much missing.
They couldn't redeem
them. Right. Because in this case, there's so much missing. Tosfos, on the other hand, says that Kuvyustus doesn't mean a kidnapper. Tosfos says Kuvyustus means a gambler. So like he gambled it away. Mm-hmm. Or is it that Moshe didn't know math? What is this? Nothing matter. Moshe Rabbeinu gave only half of what he collected to the Mishkan. The nothing matter. He seems to have kept half for himself. Well, matter shalom like Hector. And in fact, he didn't even give a whole. He didn't even give a complete half. He didn't even give 50% of what he collected. Out of 201, he only gave 100. By the way, Rashi says, what about the next pasuk mentioned that there was 1,775 extra shkolim left over after the sockets, which are used for hooks and whatever for the pillars. Okay, so Rashi says this guy is coming with Kantor. He's coming to harass the Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and to make
1,775.
That's the 11 money. That's the one kisser in 11 money that he mentioned before. But he's ignoring it because he's just trying to make trouble over here. So he's claiming like there's supposed to be 201 money, and all Moshe gave is 100, and he kept the rest for himself or something.
But even if he did not ignore it, it still would be a difference.
The point is that then you could say that he gave a little over half, but you're the controller okay. Saying he didn't even give half.
Okay.
Okay, with that said, Rabbi Tam in Sefer Yashar explains the Gemara a little bit differently. What according to Rabbi Tam, what controller means is, okay, he gave one complete half back, but the other half he didn't give back completely. He only gave back a little bit of it, and he seems to have kept the rest for himself. Amalo, so Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai tells him you're wrong. Moshe Rabbeinu gizbo naman haya. Moshe Rabbeinu was a very trustworthy treasurer. Ubaki b'chashbon, he wasn't a thief, he wasn't a kidnapper, he wasn't a gambler. Ubaki b'chashbon haya, and he knew math good and well. Umana shal kodesh kapol haya. The mana that was used for kodesh purposes was double the size of the regular one. So now let's recalculate. Instead of 1,500 mana, instead of 25 sloyim to the mana and then 60 mana to the kicker, instead you have 50 sloyim to the mana and 60 mana to the kicker. Therefore, it means you have 3,000 shekel to the kicker. Now, if we calculate it, it comes out right. You have 301,775 divided by 3,000. There's your 100 kicker. 3,000 shekel per kicker. Kuntrukos was thinking that you only have 1,500.
Before we said
1,500 shekel per kicker, 25 and then 60. Now we're saying the units are 50 and 60,
so
twice
double.
As much. So now it comes out exactly what it should be. 100 kicker plus 1,775 shekel. Yeah. So you didn't have an answer for that.
How did we come to that number, double?
Because, well, that's the question. That's the question. The Gemara is going to ask in a second how the Yerchan and Zakkai knew for a fact, other than Kuntrukos' question, he had to have some other source
sure.
That the Monash or Kodesh was called. Yeah, because, so, no, he answered the question immediately, right. So the question is, right, so where did he get that from? So the Gemara is going to ask in a minute how that is. I want to mention an interesting thing, which I referred to briefly on the WhatsApp. I put up a short thing on it. Sometimes I do to tell what's interesting things that are coming out. Reb Levick, the Rebbe's father, points out, and by the way, it's Hazman Groma because tonight and tomorrow is his birthday. He has a fascinating explanation of this Gemara Al Pi Kabbalah, as he usually does. And one thing he points out, this Kuntrukos, you look at the gematria of his name, it's exactly the same gematria as Yisrael.
Kuntrukos
is the same gematria as Yisrael, and he's a sar, just like the Jewish people are sar. What does Yisrael mean? He's sarisa imalekim. So he's like the polar opposite of the Jewish people, and therefore he's the one accusing that Moshe is a thief or this or that or whatever. Reb Levick goes on to talk about that he's claiming that when he's claiming that Moshe kept half the money for himself, like Kabbalah, he's saying about that there was trying to create a separation between Leah and Rachel. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai explains to him that no, you don't know what you're talking about. There's no separation over there. And Moshe made the calculation exactly like he was supposed to.
Even Korach didn't say that.
Okay, so then obviously this Kuntrukos is less than Korach. Well, what would you expect? But yeah, so it's an interesting point that Reb Levick makes that this guy is by his very name is the polar opposite of the Jewish people. Okay, anyway.
Kuntrukos, Russian.
Kuntrukos. Well, also. Yeah, actually, also Rav Levi points out, Rashi says over here that his purpose was lekantarei b'dvarim. They just wanted to bother Rav Yechonon and Zakkai with questions, and like therefore he's ignoring the 1775 shekel, even though it would undercut his argument a little bit. So therefore, the name Kuntrukos also has in it the word lekantar, also has in it the word kantar. So he's named after what he's coming to do. Havi bar Rabachoy. Okay, so that was the end of the discussion. But now, many years, hundreds of years later, Rabachoy wonders about what was the discussion over here. My kokashalai. Why did Rabbi Yechonon and Zakkai? What forced him to say that the monashal kodesh is doubled? And therefore answer like that. The question is by Hima Askikar Kesav Sekas Ravemer. What? The Kuntrukas' question is based on the fact that the Pasuk mentions that there were 100 kikar of silver that were used to cast the socket. Big deal. All it is Hanachot Sekas. Fine. It means that 100 kikar were used to make the socket. The Inach Bei Gaza. But you have the rest of them went into the treasury of the Mishkan.
Sekas means to cast
the socket. So the question is, the assumption was that all of the money that was collected was used for the actual construction, and that's why Kuntrukas is wondering where half of it is, asking where half of it went. The answer would be very simple. Half of it went to the construction, half of it went into the treasury of the Mishkan. The Mishkan needs to have a treasury because they need to buy korbanos and so forth. Why didn't Rabbi Yechonon and Zakkai just answer him that way? Yes, the Pasuk says 100 of them went to the socket. That doesn't mean that Moshe kept the rest for himself. It means the rest of them he brought into the treasury.
You have to prove it.
Well, the answer is no. So, cost of krach, no, but fine. That could be an acceptable answer. But the answer is no, because cost of krach, because you have a Pasuk also in that context that says explicitly, the kesef kodeh edem askikah program. Because it says the amount of silver that they collected from the enumeration of the people was 100 kikah plus 1775 shekel.
Exactly, it counts.
The point being, in other words, that Rabbi Yechonon and Zakkai couldn't say, well, there really were 200 kikar, but 100 of them were used for the sockets, and 100, because the Pasuk itself says that there were 100 after they finished gathering it, and 100 that they used for the sockets. So therefore, the only possible answer is that it was a monash or kodesh, which is coupled. Mind you, Tosfos says
that's
actually...
That's why Kuntrukas asked that question.
That's right, right, right. Okay. Mind you, Tosfos learns, by the way, that they're actually, when we're talking over here in Al Gemara about a monash, Tosfos learns that the concept of a mona didn't actually exist in those times. We're going to bring soon, the Gemara is going to bring soon from Yechezkel that there was a point when there was a mona and then it was doubled. Tosfos learns that what it was is, in the time when the Torah was given, there was not yet such a thing as a mona. In Moshe Rabbeinu's times, it didn't exist. It was invented as a unit afterwards.
So the
point is, when Rav Yechonon ben Zakkai uses the expression mona shel kodesh kofel hoya, he's not primarily talking about the mona. He uses that expression because the Gemara here soon is going to use that expression in connection with the Pasuk in Yechezkel. Really, what he was meaning to say is the kikar was doubled. Instead of a kikar of 1,500, it was a kikar of 3,000. Okay.
But we still don't know where he took it from the kofel.
So that's what we're going to ask now. This that Rabbi Yechonon and Zakkai is telling Kuntrukas that the monashal kodesh was double in size. Minole, where is he getting it from? E lema mine. Are you going to say he's getting it from this very context over here? Sharei kan shivim ve'echad mona. And you would say the reason why he would be getting it for the reason why he'd be getting it from here because the pasuk is said because we have again you have the pasuk mentions 100 kikar and then it mentions 1775 shkolim. Now if a mona is 25 shkolim and a kikar is 60 of those, it means if 1500 shekel make a mona, then 1775 is more than 1500. So you could argue he got it from this very point. Sharei kan shivim ve'echad mona, because the pasuk says v'ata elof u'shvamei es v'chamish v'shivim also vavim la'amudim, because it says 1775 shekel he used to make hooks for the pillars, etc. V'loi menon a cost of
71 is a mona.
1500 is a regular mona.
Right.
So which means, in other words, that 1775 therefore equals 25 are a mona. So that 25 are a mona. So therefore, 1775, which is what we have left after we subtract the 100, then you have 1775 divided by 25 equals 71 mana. 60 mana make a kikar. So maybe then, Rabbi Yechonon Zakkai knows from this very context. Why would we be mentioning an amount which equals 71 mana, which is more than a kikar? Why would we be mentioning it as individual shkolim? the loy manana cost of the pray to it. The pasuk is not aggregating it into kikars or into monas. It's listing it individually as 1775 shekel. The im isa, if you were going to think that it was a regular mona, then the Torah should have mentioned 101 kikar plus 11 mana. Or okay, fine. To take Tosfos's point, there wasn't a mana in those times. Fine. The Torah would have mentioned 101 kikar plus 275 shekel. In other words, maybe therefore, so from that alone, Rabbi Yochanan realizes that the mana of Kodesh, that the kicker of Kodesh, that is, can't have been only 1,500, because then why would we be listing 1,775, which is more than that, without aggregating it into a kicker? But that's not a solid proof. So you could argue Elam Adeloy Manana, cost of Elam Aproach, right? So you could argue, precisely because of that, since we see that the Pasuk is mentioning it as individual numbers rather than aggregating it into kikrim, then therefore Shmamina Monash or Kodesh Kapalaya, that would prove that the Mona and therefore the kicker of Kodesh was doubled, and therefore 1775 is less than 3,000. It doesn't reach a complete kicker, and therefore the Torah can't list it as a complete kicker. Okay, the problem with that is the Dilma Chloli Kakashir Bekikri, properly like Kakashir Bekikri. However, that's not a proof, because maybe the Torah wants to only give a round number, only a number in round hundreds of Kikrim. Maybe, in other words, the Torah doesn't want to mention 201 or 101 Kikrim. The Torah wants to mention 100 even. The Torah wants to mention, let's say, for example, hypothetically, suppose that the Monash or Kodesh was not double. Suppose we were to say that what it means is, like Rabbi Choy said, that they actually took 100 and used it for the sockets and then put the other 100 in the treasury or whatever. The point is, why would the Torah be listing 1775 individually if 1775 is more than 1,500? And that means, in other words, you have more than one whole kicker, because the Torah doesn't want to mention 101 kicker. It wants to mention 100 kicker, a nice round number. So you could argue that. Okay, but you have another, so here's a proof from a couple of psukim later. The next pasuk, actually, the copper that was given, that people donated to the Mishkan, tnufa literally means that they waved it, because like they brought it, they was 70, shivim kikar, was 70 kikar, v'alpayim v'abameis shekel, and 2,400 shekel. So again, you have 2,400 is more than 1,500. That's the point. Sharekan tisha v'shishim mana. So here you have the 2,400 shekel equals 96 mana, so 2,400 divided by 25 equals 96. Okay, fine. And again, you take close to this point, you don't mention monas in the Torah, maybe, but fine. The point is, it's still more than a regular kicker, because a regular kicker is 1,500. And yet you see that the Torah lists it as 2,400 shekel rather than as one kicker plus 900 shekel. Shmamina monash or kodesh kapalaya. So that would be a proof that the monash or kodesh was double. The problem with that is, again, life with the silver.
Because here it didn't state it. So
because again, we could say by the silver, the reason it didn't mention it, the reason it didn't aggregate 1775 into one kicker plus extra is because 101 is not a round number. It wanted to keep a round number. It wanted to keep a round number of hundreds. But here, when you have 70 kicker, 70 is not a round number of hundreds, so it should have said 71 kicker. The fact that it doesn't proves that a kicker must be more than 2,400. It's double. It's 3,000. The problem with that is, again, the Dilma Prata Rabba Kafashir Bekikri. Maybe though, the Torah doesn't mind mentioning a larger prat, meaning tens, in Kikrim. Prata Zuta like Kafashir Bekikri, but the Torah doesn't want to bother mentioning units of Kikrim. In other words, fine, the Torah will say 100 kicker rather than 101. The Torah will say 70 kicker rather than 71. How does that prove though that a kicker of Kodesh is double? Now, by the way, in those psukim, it mentions the gold that was donated, and it mentions 29 kikar of gold plus 730 shekel. The Gemara is not mentioning that, and possibly if the Gemara had brought that, it would have said, okay, but gold being a very precious metal, fine, every individual kicker is important, and therefore you want to mention even if it's not a round number. But copper
is still copper.
Then here we're talking copper, and then silver, and then copper. Silver is precious metal, but not as precious as gold, so therefore maybe the Torah only wants to do things by tens. Okay. So you don't have a solid proof from there yet. Elo Amar of Chista, the rather of Chista says, here is the actual proof that the Monash of Kodesh, and therefore the kicker of Kodesh, is double in size, Mehacha, from a pasuk in Yechezkel. We discussed this, by the way, last year in Menachos. We had a sugya about this in Menachos as well, about the changes in the monetary system over time. Yechezkel lived after the, he lived at the end of the first Beis Hamikdash, and then this particular Nevuah that we're talking about is from the last chapters of Yechezkel, which he said a Nevuah, he was given a Nevuah 14 years after the Churban, about how things are going to be in the third Beis Hamikdash. So he says like this, Vashekel Esrim Gera, the Shekel consists of 20 Gera, which is like it was in the times of the Torah, Esrim Shkolim, Hamisha Esrim Shkolim, Asorva Hamisha Shokel, Hamona Yilachem. A mona shall consist for you of 20 shkolim plus 25 shkolim plus 15 shkolim. In other words, 20 plus 25 is 45 plus 15 is 60.
60,
yeah. So in other words, a mona consists of 60 shekels, saying.
Why does it
not just say 60? Tosfos says over here, and Tosfos also discusses in Menachos, that what it is it Yechezkel is describing the different weights for this purpose that they had in the Beis Mikdash. If they had to weigh out a third of a monoshel kodesh, then they would need 20. If they needed to weigh out half of a weight system. So therefore, they had different denominations that total make up the weight. Okay. So now the question is: if we're saying that a monah consists of 60 shekel, 60 sela, that is what Tanakh calls a shekel, the Chachamim call a sela is 4 dinarim. So it comes out from Moss and Baboy and Havi, and it comes out then you have 240 dinner in a mona, and we know that a mona is 25 slaim, so it should be 100 dinarim. And here Yechezkel is telling us it's 60 slaim, which is 240 dinarim, so it's more than twice as much.
Mona is 25 slaim, but what's the other units you said?
We said before a kicker, but now we're talking about Yechezkel is telling us that a mona is 60 slaim, which would be 240 dinarim. So how does it go from 100 to 240? It's more than double. El Shmamina, the number one we see from that, mona shel kodesh mona kapalaya. Number one we see from that the mona shel kodesh was double in size. So that takes it, one second, relax. So that takes us from 100 to 200. Number two, Shmamina mesikin al amigas. Number two, we see from that you're allowed to add to the units of measurement. The aim is sif and yosu ashtos, but if you're going to add, you can't add more than one sif. And number three, when we say 1/6, we mean a shtus milavar, which is what we would call 1/5. That's the maximum you can increase by a unit by. We learned in Menachos we had a calf and various other units were enlarged like that. So here, Yechezkel is telling us like this. 20, a chomish is 25%. A chomish is also milavar. This is a shtus milavar.
Shtus, which is a fifth.
The word shtus means 1/6, but shtus milavar means that once you add it, it's 1/6 of the total, meaning it's 1/5 of the original amount.
Oh.
Yeah. So here, like this, we start with a common mona is 100 dinar. We double it because the mona shel kodesh, and therefore we get 200. Then we add 20% to that, and we get from 200 to 240. The 40 extra is 1/6 of the total because 40 is 1/6 of 240. We learn these three things from Yechezkel's pasuk. So therefore, we see from that that a mona shel kodesh was doubled. We learned over there, we discussed over there in Menachos, Tosfos discusses it over there, Tosfos also discusses it over here, the possibilities that there may have been two stages in the increases over there. They may have first, Rabbi Natan learned that there was only one stage when there was an increase. They increased the size of the cella itself, and then they also increased the number of sloim in a mona, and therefore in a kicker. Tosfos brings over there another possibility that first they increased the size of the mona, and later on they increased the size of the cella itself. Because we find throughout Shas, it's a commonplace thing that a cella consists of 20, that a cella consists of 4 dinarim, and a dinar is 6 ma. A ma is the same as a gera, and before Yechezkel was saying that a cella consists of 20 gera. So that means that was also increased by 1/6. So that's the thing. Either what it means is the cella and the mona were both increased by 1/6 at the time, or it means first they increased the mona and later on they increased the cella. Anyway, the point is each time the increase can't be more than 20% over the original. So that's how we get from 200 to 240. And how do we get from 100 to 200? Because mona shel kodesh kapal haya. That's what Yechem and Zakai's
proof. So the 1/6 in Torah is 1/6.
It means what we would call 1/6. Yeah, no, 1/6 of the total.
1/6
of the new total, which is 1/5 of the original. Yeah. Okay, so that's that. So that's Rabbi Yechiman Zakkai's proof that mona shel kodesh kapal haya. And therefore, so that was his answer to Kuntrukus, that that it wasn't 1,500, it wasn't 1,500 shekel to the kicker, it was 3,000, and therefore the calculation works out.
So the quick cheshbon is
you have 301,775 shekel.
Right.
300,000 comes to 100 kicker, 3,000 per kicker.
Right.
1775 comes to 1775. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Okay. Getting back now to the matter of Petr Hamor, which is the subject of our parak, Amar Rav Chanina, Sha'altias Rav Eliezer Bebeis Mois V'Rabba. I asked Rav Eliezer in the big Beis Medrash. Why are the firstborn donkeys different than the firstborn of horses or camels? Why only is there a concept of pidyon peter chamor among the non-kosher species? Why is there not a pidyon peter of a horse or any other? With that said, actually, when you say fine, but actually, Rashi brings on the pasuk in Parshas Vayi, and Marsha quotes it over here, that actually there is a reason behind the Gzeres HaKosuv. The reason is because in the Pesukim, in other places, and in particular in a different place in Yechezkel, the Mitzriim are compared to donkeys, Asher B'sar Chamor and B'saram. So therefore, the donkey is an appropriate symbol for the Mitzriim.
And the shekel also come on a donkey.
That's true also.
So what's the connection with
I have no idea. Okay. But oid, and so that's one thing, it's like Zerat HaKosu, because the Mitzrayim are compared to donkeys. But oid, Shesiyu, Yisrael, B'shach, Mitzrayim, and Mitzrayim. Also, another reason is because the donkeys assisted the Jewish people when they were leaving Mitzrayim. Because there was not a single person among the Jewish people that didn't have with him 90 Luvim donkeys. Luvim, the pashtus means they come from Libya, so they were very high quality, strong donkeys that are able to carry big burdens. That are loaded up with the gold and silver of Mitzrayim. So every Yid had at least 90 of those. So the donkeys helped.
When they asked the Mitzrayim
for their gold and silver, yeah, and then so they had at least 90, each person had at least 90 of these donkeys carrying them out, so therefore the donkeys helped the Jewish people. Okay, before I should say that maybe it doesn't mean literally, I mean, if you consider the number of Jews and you consider the 90 donkeys per person, you're talking about millions of donkeys. So okay, Rav Yaakov Emden says, and Ben Yehoyada says, maybe we're not talking about every single Jew, maybe we mean only the more important Jews. Another possibility, Ben Yehoyada says, it means like this. The amount of gold and silver that each Jew took out of Mitzrayim was equal to the value of enough of as much merchandise, non-gold and silver merchandise, that is, that you could load up on 90 Luvi donkeys. In other words, the amount of gold and silver was equivalent in value to regular merchandise that you could load on 90 Luvi donkeys. So in other words, we're talking each person has maybe one or two actual donkey loads worth, because gold and silver is much more concentrated wealth. But yeah, so therefore we're calling it 90 donkeys, because you could take that amount and sell it for 90 donkeys worth of regular merchandise. Okay. So actually there's the idea that the Jewish people are compared to a sheep, like the Jewish people were taken out of Mitzrayim and the Mitzrayim were punished. But if you don't redeem the donkey, then yeah, neck has to be broken. Just like when the Mitzrayim were stubborn and wouldn't let the Jewish people go, then their pride had to be broken. So that's why donkeys. Number one, there's a cost of them, and number two, because the donkeys assisted the Jewish people in carrying out the wealth of Mitzrayim. But Oid Shilter, then Rav Chanina says, I asked Rav Eliezer another question. My Loshin Refidim, why is the name of the place, we have one of the places where the Jewish people stayed during the period after the Citizen's Time, it's called Refidim. Why is it called Refidim? Now, why is he not asking about every one of the places they stayed in? So there are a couple of explanations. One of them is the fact that the Pasuk makes a point of mentioning that the Pasuk says they camped in Midbar Sinai and they camped in Refidim. So like once it says they camped in general, if they camped in Midbar Sinai, why doesn't it specifically mention the name of the place Refidim? That's one answer. Then Yehoyada gives a different answer, which is that Refidim is in the plural. Place names are not usually in the plural. Sukkot also. It was called that because Yaakov built sukkot over there for his livestock. So in general, when a place has a plural place name, then you have to wonder about it. Okay, so why is it called Refidim? Va'amali Refidim Shema. So Rabbi Eliezer tells me nothing special, just the name of it was Refidim. actually the Gemara says Ketanoi. This is actually like a Machlokas Tanoim. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Refidim Shema. Rabbi Eliezer says that the name of it was Refidim, no, not necessarily any special connotation. Rabbi Yeshua Omer Sheripu Asman Medivei Torah. Rabbi Yeshua says it was called that because they weakened their hands from the study of Torah, and that's why Rashi says that's why Amalek was able to attack them over there.
Ripu
means to weaken. V'chein hu Omer, and thus you have a pasuk in Yirmiyah that uses this expression, Lehitnu always so bonim mirifin yadayim. Fathers do not turn to children because of weakness of hand. The context over there is talking about when the Plishtim were attacked and conquered by Nebuchadnezzar's army, where like everybody was so terrified that like even the fathers don't have the ability to help out their children.
So Hashem made them not terrified from weakness.
No. So in other words, the point is that the Jewish people in Rifidim, they were slacking off from learning Torah, and you see from the expression Rifyan Yadayim, you see that slacking off and not being able to defend themselves is called Rifidim, and that is called Rifyan Yadayim, and that's why the place was called Rifidim to commemorate that. They weakened their hands, they slacked off from learning Torah, and that's why they were susceptible to Amalek.
Well, it was all over history like this.
Indeed. Yeah. But Oid She'iltiv, then Rabbi Chanina says, I asked Rabbi Eliezer another question. My Lashon Shittim. The last place that the Jewish people camped in the desert before they crossed over the Jordan was Shittim. So why was it called that? Again, why the pasuk has to specifically mention that they stayed in Shittim? Before that, it just says generally they're staying in Aris Moav. And why is it called Shittim in the plural?
But Aris Moav is called Shittim.
Aris Moav is a general area. It means the plains of Moav. Within that, there was a place called Shittim. So within the plains of Moab. So if it already says the plains of Moab, why doesn't it specifically mention the one city or the one town or whatever where they stayed? Yeah. And also, why is it in plural? But Amalei Shittim Shema, and again, Rabbi Eliezer says, that's the name of it. No special connotation. Again, Ketanoi, this is actually like a Machlokas Tanoim. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Shittim Shema. Rabbi Eliezer says just that. The name of it was just Shittim, plain. Rabbi Yeshua Omer Shinis Asku Vajivir Shtus. Rabbi Yeshua says it was called Shittim because the Jewish people got involved with Shtus over there and ended up being promiscuous with their daughters of Moab over there, with all the repercussions of that. So of course, you have the famous in Nevi'im Masechet. You have every year in Ma'amar and Bosi Lagani where it talks about Shtus to Kedusha versus Shtus to Klippa, that you're supposed to take the Shittim of Klippa, the Shtus of Klippa, and turn it into Ase Shittim beans for the Mishkan. Yeah. Okay. Since we're mentioning what happened in Shittim, the Gemara gives us another drasha from that. We have in Sanhedrin we had this, and we had a whole sugya over there about the ins and outs of it, because we're talking about the fact that Bilam has no chelik lo lamabah. So we got into the whole thing of how he gave Balak the advice to entice the Jewish people, etc. So here the Gemara is mentioning one other one. The pasuk says that the daughters of Moab called the people to join in sacrifices to their gods. So what's the expression about tikrena? So here also we have a machloekus Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua about what the word means. Now it doesn't just mean that they called them, because if they called them, then why are the Jewish people so susceptible to it? Rabbi Eliezer Omer Arumos Pogubahen. Rabbi Eliezer says it means that the daughters of Moab met up with them undressed. How is that? But tikrena literally means like they themselves, without even any clothing in the way, bumped deliberately into the Jewish people in order to inflame them and get them involved. Rabbi Yeshua Omer Shenasa Kulan Bali Kroyin. Rabbi Yeshua.
So afraid that the Jews
would kill them? Or? No, I mean, not the pashas. They wanted to entice them with maximum effect, and they figured if they come with clothes, they might be able to resist. They might not, but if they come, undressed and they bump into them, then already it inflames them very much. Rabbi Yeshua Omer Shenasa Kulan Bali Kroyin. Rabbi Yeshua says the word batikrana is maloshin keri, that they caused all the Jewish people to become bali keri. By enticing. So either it means Arumas Togubahan or it means Shinasa Kulam Balakroyan. Okay, but the Keri is the same Shodosh. It's a similar Shodosh. Now she says Meloshin Mikra. In that case, Batikurana is Meloshin Mikra, something that happens. Because Keri is, that's what it is. Tumas Keri is something that happens.
Right. Keri, I understand. But what's the connection with Batikra?
That's why Rashi says, "Patikrena mashal gufan hayapagevem." Their actual bodies, without even anything in between, bumped into them.
Pogubahem,
yeah.
Rashi says that in the first that they with the old women outside.
Yeah, the old women outside and the young woman inside. Yeah, but in other words, okay, so they may have had more than one. That I think that was the Gemara mentions that in Sanhedrin. Yeah, they may have had more than one. The pastors, like I said, yes, they had more than one. They were very skilled at this, and you have the famous thing, even Cosby, a princess, is masking herself to do this. Yeah. Okay, we'll stop here, and we'll start the Mishnah tomorrow, Rosh Hashanah.